And away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. And we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show as we try to warm up after a very, very cold morning. Certainly the coldest morning of the year, of the winter season. And actually, I think it's been a couple of years since we saw those kinds of temperatures. Luckily, we covered everything. The plants were covered, and of course, the pets are inside, and so it was a cold morning. But start to warm up the rest of the week. Today is Tuesday, January the 23rd, 2023. The Buckmaster Show, excuse me, the 24th. I'm off a day. All right, January 24th, our show now in our 13th year broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio in the Bustos Media Tucson Broadcast Complex, the radio station 1030 KVOI, worldwide live listening, and our very extensive, pretty much 12 full years of programs at buckmastershow.com. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We go now on the live line to Marana, Arizona. Marana Mayor Ed Honey joins us now. Mayor Honey, the third generation of a fifth generation Marana family. Mayor Honey has served, let's see, three different occasions on the Marana Council, and he will soon be, in a couple of weeks, the chair of the Regional Transportation Authority. Mayor, how are you? How's your new year going so far?
Well, the new year is great, Bill. It's a little warmer in Marana than Tucson. I think it was a couple of degrees warmer out here this morning. So,
yeah. It's a heat wave. Okay, Mayor, what kind of year did you have? And I do want to talk about RTA since that's going to be a big issue. But let's talk about Marana 2022, a good year, and what do you see for 2023?
Marana had a fantastic year in 2022. And as you know, things are slowing down now for almost everybody. We had about 890 new single-family houses. That's new families moving into our community. Tremendous amount of corporate structures, both retail and employment structures built in Marana. And we've done pretty well. We think it was a really good year.
Anything on the horizon that you like in 2023?
Well, we're getting a bunch of new things. I mean, we're getting a couple more hotels. We have 12 now. That'll make 14.
Wow.
Seven apartment complexes in some phase of being built right now. And a lot of that, Bill, is because so many people want to be mobile. And also, a lot of young families don't have the down to put down on a house, so they'll rent a high-level apartment. And they're just building them like crazy, and they're filling them up. So there is a demand. Just a lot of good things happening in our community.
How about families that have been there forever, like you, that have owned cotton farms? Are they selling off land to the developers?
You know, some are and some aren't. I mean, cotton farming is still, I live in the far north end, close to Pinal County. The majority of the land is still cotton farming or ranching, but a lot of people are moving here. And I want to talk about a myth that people talk about. A lot of the no-growthers are like, you're taking all of our water.
Yeah.
Well, cotton farming takes about 5 acre-feet of water a year. What that means is 5 feet deep of water. You might water 10 or 12 times on an acre to grow a cotton crop. Housing, which averages about 4 houses to the acre, takes 1.5 acre-feet. So my thing with everybody is, we are environmentalists, and by building houses on fields, we're using 1/4 the water.
Wow, but the traditional thinking, and as you say, a myth, that the cotton farmers are just sucking up all of our water.
Well, cotton farming does take a lot of water. What we have to realize is cotton was here first.
Yeah.
You know, most of northwest Tucson, Sarita area, the Marana area, was cotton farming and citrus farming, and has been for well over 100 years.
All right, let's talk about the Regional Transportation Authority, which will sunset the 20-year program. Sunsets in 2026. It's 2023. The clock is ticking. So this is a really pivotal year, and you are going to be the chairman that next meeting in early February. You're the vice chair now. This is a big year, isn't it?
It is a big year, Bill. I think what we're going to try to do this year, and we're getting very close, is get everybody into some kind of an agreement. And when you're dealing with nine entities, mayors, tribal chairmen, people from the state and the county, sometimes it's not that easy. But we're getting closer and closer, and Our hope is to put this on the ballot in 2024. It would not take effect until the June of 2026, but to try to get this out here and give us time to talk to the citizens in our community.
Yeah, it's the first time I've heard somebody say perhaps when it might go on the ballot. 2024, are you thinking like May, something like that, or what?
Well, it might be June. This one runs, May or June. It might be a special election. I don't think we would do it in a general election. I hope we wouldn't.
No.
It's such an important detail. And the RTA is the best thing that's happened to Pima County as far as transportation, as far as I've ever known, as far as getting projects done, whether it's interchanges, INA, and Twin Peaks in Marana, Ruth Roth in the county, and you know, projects up Cerrito interchange up on 19, and things that help move traffic and move people, and it's been a pretty good program. And our biggest issue now is, you know, some want to spend it all on transit. Some want to spend it all on roads. Some want to spend it all on safety. And we've got to figure out what the equal amounts are going to be there to make this program work. I think we're going to make it happen.
What's the big selling point if you had to do like a 30-second pitch, Mayor Honey?
Well, I would ask people on the northwest side, and that would include Marana, Tucson, Pima County, look at Twin Peaks and Ina Road interchanges. You know, these are large $100 million projects, but they move so many people back and forth to work or to school or to church or to see family in such a timely manner. They go over the railroad track, so they're safer. And I think it just makes our life better that we're able to get around more easily. We also do safety signals for schools, hawk signals and things like that to make it safer for our children to cross roads to go to school. And we've done things for the environment as well, built an interchange in Oro Valley for wildlife, put a trapezoidal underpass in Marana on Twin Peaks Road for wildlife. So we're trying to touch as many bases as we can.
I've only got about a minute. Are you having a homelessness problem there in Marana like we are in Tucson?
Not so much, no. We've had a couple encampments down along the Santa Cruz River. And we really haven't had them in the business district or the neighborhoods. We kind of try to police that, and we know a lot of those people need help. But what we'll do is if we'll pick up the individual and take them to a place they can get help instead of just living on the street. We really don't want that to happen in our community.
Okay, Mayor, we will be checking in with you as we get into this year with updates on the RTA. Mayor Ed Honey, I hope the year's off to a good start for you personally, and all the best to you.
Thank you, Bill. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot. The mayor of Marana, he's the longest-serving elected official in Pima County. My goodness, he's been on the council three different occasions. So, and I always like to point out he is a Vietnam vet, too. So the man's had an incredible career. All right. Mona's Danish Bakery does an incredible job. Home of the Danish Kringle. They are open right now for lunch. Yes, they take Monday off now. I don't blame them. The weekends have been pretty darn busy, so they need that day off. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, getting ready for Valentine's Day. It's the next holiday that they are pointing to. And I want to point out also that they do a great lunch. We talk a lot about breakfast, but they are open right now for lunch. I like the chicken breast sandwich. Outstanding. With that big pickle that they give you on the side. Anyway, monasdanishbakery.com is the website. So, next, Shelley Fishman. Given me, what was that, Shell? Oh, we're going sideways there. Okay, but things could change in the next couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And we welcome Shelley Fishman to the show. He's with us every Tuesday at pretty much exactly the same time, 12:20. Shelley, how's your week going so far?
So far, market's doing okay, so I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you know, it's like one step forward, and I'm going to say a half step back. We're making some progress.
You know, the market has been relatively aimless in terms of, for the past 6 or 7 months, what real direction it wants to go, because there hasn't been the kind of news that would convince investors one way or another that something is going to happen. So are we going to have a recession? Are we not going to have a recession? If so, when? Is it going to be deep? There is no consensus there. At the same time, economic reports that come out on inflation, on consumer sentiment, on spending, all of that tend to be getting better and always be on the positive side. So, you know, traditional economists are scratching their heads and going, what's going to happen? And when the market has that kind of uncertainty with no, you know, windage, either, you know, headwinds or tailwinds, it tends to do what it's doing right now, which is unconvincing, but also not alarming.
Got a big question for you.
Okay.
How will history remember, well, my particular generation, and pretty much yours as well, the baby boom generation?
Oh, gosh.
Gee, I gave you a big question, and like, do we have an hour and a half to talk about?
Well, no. let's start and maybe continue this conversation over the next couple of weeks. One of the things that I didn't quite understand was the resentment that I was hearing from subsequent generations about yours and my generation, the baby boomers. And I'm scratching my head and going, what did we do that would cause Gen Xers and millennials to look at us and say, you have really screwed it up? And I'm thinking,
and say,
wait
a second. We're a drain or whatever.
Yeah. Now, so I've been doing a little bit of research and reading articles by mostly conservatives like, you know, Russ Douthat and David Brooks, trying to understand where this resentment is coming from and trying to work it in with the headwinds in the economy that you and I have talked about over the years, you know, income disparity and the, you know, the cost of medical care and the cost of policing the world. When baby boomers were born, and that's by definition right after World War II, the country had come out of a war, had come out of the Great Depression, and the social contract, which is the degree to which individuals in a society are willing to give up personal freedoms in exchange for the protection of that society, that had really established itself in a way that, for instance, my parents coming out of the war had a lot of faith that the government would do the right thing. They had a lot of benefits that were provided by the government. You know, the whole set of veterans benefits. If you went to school in any of the large cities in this country, and you went to state or city schools, and I'm talking post high school, it was free.
Yeah.
If you needed help from the government in terms of both VA benefits, but also if you were homeless, if you were expected to do better than your parents in terms of financing, if you needed the kind of support in the community to support who you were and what you were and how you were going to, you know, enter the middle class and stay in the middle class and have your kids stay in the middle class and do better than you, that was all there for you. And then somehow something happened, Bill. We boomers started taking that stuff away from subsequent generations. Now, a lot of it started in the Vietnam War and this whole angst about guns and butter. But I'm going to blame Ronald Reagan here.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Ronald Reagan said the government isn't the solution, the government's the problem, mm-hmm. and people, a whole generation of people believed him and started taking away the benefits that were the foundation for the baby boomer generation to do well.
And we still hear it so much.
We still hear it so much.
Public schools often referred to now as government schools.
Yeah. As one example. So today, if you're a teenager trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life and figure out how you're going to build a career, corporations no longer provide the kind of training that they provided when I was entering the corporate world. The cost of education, not secondary, but post-secondary education has become so high that today to get a four-year college degree, and if your parents can't afford to pay for that, you are essentially signing up for a level of debt for the rest of your life that is crippling.
Yeah, you're right.
There's no reason for that. Today, this country is spending almost 10% more out of GDP on health care than any other country in the industrialized world. So all of these things combine to create a tremendous amount of resentment mm-hmm. against the boomer generation mm-hmm. by millennials and Gen Xers, and they're not getting ahead the way we got ahead. They're not expected to get ahead the way we were expected to get ahead. And you know what? Low expectations causes mediocre performance.
You said something that really resonates. Why the baby boomers decided not to give the benefits, the same benefit that we had growing up.
I just can't figure that out. I maybe it's because we took it for granted, and then we got convinced by this story that government was the problem, that the private sector would do a better job of providing those kinds of things than the public sector would. And, you know, I think we've now had almost, you know, three quarters of a century to see that that is not necessarily true, that the stuff we give up as individuals in exchange for getting those services from our government is maybe the right kind of trade-off. When you take a look at Europe, and it's different in each country in Europe, the benefits, the social safety net, the social contract that our competitors in the world expect from their government is far greater than what we provide here to our own citizens.
And but the argument would be they're going to be taxed for those
absolutely.
Benefits.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so what did we do? You know, starting with Reagan, we started cutting taxes. And then we started generating deficits. And so Reagan cut back a little bit on the tax cuts. But we got this thing in our heads that said cutting taxes is going to improve the economy, and it is going to give people with more money in their pockets more money to spend and invest, and none of that happened. So what we see is that when Clinton came in, and I'm going back into history here, when Clinton came in and raised taxes to a level that, you know, was still well below where taxes were, say, during the Kennedy years, we had a decade of economic expansion. Bush came in, was scared to death because he came in at a time of recession, or there was a recession right as he was coming in. Again, what did he do? He cuts taxes. Not only does he cut taxes, but he cuts inheritance taxes so that the amount of money that your and my generation has amassed that would, you would expect, get put back into the society through inheritance taxes, those taxes went from $1 million over which you'd pay inheritance tax to $3 million during Bush. And then Trump raised it to $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that money that gets transferred massively from one generation to the next is not finding its way back into the society. It's not finding its way back into the government's ability to do things like infrastructure and education and the things that build solid societies, and instead that money is going to increase the disparity between the very rich and the very poor. It is not a way to build and maintain a solid structure. And so what we need to do is raise taxes. We need to go back close to where Clinton, you know, was, and really take a look at what the needs of the society are to provide that foundation for its people, and then not deficit spend necessarily, but begin to fund the government through taxation at levels that can support that kind of foundational basis for a middle class and for people feeling good about living in this country and feeling good about being part of this country. National service is another thing we need to do. I'm on a soapbox. I apologize.
That's
but it's
right.
become so clear to me now that the problem is not overtaxation or deficit spending. The problem is we're not paying for what we need because we don't have the money to pay for it. And we don't have the money to pay for it because for some reason we've gotten it into our heads that taxing people is the wrong thing to do.
Okay, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Shell, hope you have a great rest of the week.
You too, Bill.
All right.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things 33 East 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Perfect time to, I know it's been, the mornings have been really cold, but we're going to get our spring coming up here. So good time to start thinking about some color for your spring color for your garden. The 13-acre site also is home to Zocalo Village, all that beautiful merchandise imported, much of it from Mexico. There are some beautiful items, kitchen sets that are made right here in Tucson, made out of mesquite wood. Beautiful things. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. Green Things, 53 years in the business. They are open daily. When we do our telephone interview, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture and a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. He served on the U of A faculty and worked statewide since 1987. Professor Silvertooth has been recognized as a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. And he's so knowledgeable about what's going on with the whole situation with water. This is the first time I've seen you in the new year, so I think it's still appropriate to say, I hope your new year is off to a good start. Good to see you.
It is. Good to see you as well, Bill. Thank you.
So we've got so much going on. I read that, all the rain in California has made a very small difference in Lake Mead. It went up just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. It's making a little bit of difference. And what's probably more important to us is the snowpack up in the Rockies. And the snowpack in the Rockies this year right now at this point is looking pretty good. And you think of that in terms of the long-term averages, and it's about 138-139% of long-term averages. And so it's pretty good right now. However, you put that in the context of just the past few years, we've had some other good years. You take 2019 was a good year for snowpack. It was over 20 inches of what they call water equivalent, liquid equivalent snowpack. Right now it's about 12.2 inches. So it's a good forecast. In that good year of 2019, it was 8.5 inches at this time. So that's the kind of indication that we have. Now, what's been happening too, though, is as things warm up fast and getting warmer earlier in the spring, the snow melt comes off, the trees suck up more water in the forest.
And that's what happened in 2019.
Absolutely. It's been happening about the past 5 years.
2019 was a pretty good water year in the Colorado Rockies. But come March, poop.
Yeah, that's the deal. So right now the forecast looks good, and if that water could come out of that snowpack and into the river, that'd help both Lake Powell and Lake Mead, which are both about 25%, under 25% capacity right now. So things are looking decent, in terms of some small improvements, but we're a long way from coming out of our hole from this drought.
What about national water management? I understand you were in Yuma and you met with some of the top officials in the Biden administration over this issue.
Well, the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation, Camille Towton, was out in the Southwest, mm-hmm. and I met her. I mean, I wasn't really party to the educational program that she was provided from the local folks in the...
But you got a gist of what was going on.
Sure enough, yeah, I did. I was meeting with the same people that were working with her. So she was out in the Yuma area for several days, and I commend she and her team for doing that, coming out and seeing things firsthand. They left Yuma on Friday 2 weeks ago and went over to the Imperial Valley. I'm sure they've got a good education and a good chance to see things there. Then we're going over to the West Coast, then to San Diego and Los Angeles before she was returning back to D.C. So she was out to see things firsthand, and it is a complex situation. I got to meet her, just said hello, kind of a howdy-do kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But she did, I said, it's good that you're out here, and she said, it certainly is. This is complex. I think that's pretty much what she said. This is a complicated situation.
And Arizona's certainly a major player.
Absolutely. We have an allocation off the Colorado River of 2.8 million acre feet out of the 16.5 that's allocated totally on the river. But it's extremely important to us. That Colorado River water equates to about 40% of the water we use in this state.
Governor Hobbs is talking about the state's Groundwater Management Act that needs to be revised. When we talk about revision on that, how old is the GMA?
It was passed in 1980.
Okay.
And there's been quite a few folks that have been pushing for that the past several years. I find it interesting now that this new governor is picking up on those ideas, those sentiments, mm-hmm. and moving forward with it. There's a lot of good reasons why that should be, and it did us a lot of good for, you know, well over 40 years. But, you know, we've come to a point in time where we're dealing with new issues, new problems. The growth has continued to take place. The state has doubled in size and population since that time. And we're dealing with this mega drought for more than 23 years. So they have some good points about the reconsideration of the Groundwater Management Act, adding to that, what do we do next for the next 40 years?
And Bruce Babbitt played a huge role at that time.
He was governor at that time,
former governor. Yes, sir. He's now a private citizen. He's 84, lives in Washington, although, as the Arizona Daily Star pointed out Sunday, he considers himself a loyal and avid Arizonan. So he thinks we need to not only take a look at, you know, revising the state's Groundwater Management Act, but he says agriculture, your colleagues are going to have to do more.
Well, he has a good point there. He has a good point in relation to the fact that in this state, agriculture is the recipient of about 70% of the freshwater diversions in this state. On the whole Colorado River watershed, it represents about 80%. So the arithmetic's pretty simple. If we have to cut about 4 million acre feet off the river budget because it's only been flowing at 12.3 the past 20 years when it's budgeted at 16.5, that arithmetic is pretty straightforward, and something has to give in agriculture. What he didn't say, and Mr. Davis didn't include in the article either, are some really important points about the fact that Arizona's already given up 21% of its Colorado River allocation.
That was not in the story.
No, sir, it wasn't, and that's a function of the drought contingency plan, which was ratified in 2019 to deal with this drought, and all of that water, that 592,000 acre feet, has come out of agriculture. So agriculture has taken that bite. Another thing he didn't mention, too, if he thinks about all the water that goes to agriculture on the Colorado River, both the Palo Verde Valley and California has given up 20% of their water through a deal with the Metropolitan Water District in Los Angeles. So that's 20% of their water that's going into L.A., and then the Imperial Irrigation District has given up, I think, 500,000 acre feet that's going over to San Diego. So agriculture has given. Now, the question, the thing he poses is ag's going to have to give some more. I'd also point out that Mr. Davis didn't bring this in, nor did Mr. Babbitt, that this last summer, after the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation said, well, we're ready to make some moves, some cuts pretty fast. They said they're going to do it in August, which they didn't. But the agricultural communities in the lower Colorado River stepped up. And they volunteered almost another million acre feet, and they said as how we would do it. And that proposal was not even really, I don't think it was really incorporated into the discussions appropriately. So it's kind of now kind of beginning to fracture. But they had a coalition this summer of the ag communities on the lower Colorado River saying, we recognize this. The arithmetic's clear. We're going to have to give up some water. And they're willing to come up with about a million acre feet in addition to what they've already been reallocating.
Yeah, you said it's beginning to fracture. Some in the ag community are saying, look, we've already taken a hit.
Yeah, they have. They're saying, what are the cities going to do? Yeah.
I mean,
why should we bear the burden of the whole thing? But, you know, that's where we're getting into this rub, Bill, of urban versus ag. It's really becoming quite accentuated right now.
And citizens, voters, I didn't realize in this past election in Cochise County and Graham County were voting on water.
Yes, sir. They had two what would you call them, propositions or movements that options that were available
initiatives.
Yeah. Thank you. They were available to the voters. One for forming a new active management area. We call them an AMA, which was a function of the 1980 Groundwater Management Act. We're in Pima County's in an AMA, for example. Mm-hmm. They don't have one in the southeast part of the state. So they've had that option, that initiative was on the ballot for two areas, one around Douglas, mm-hmm. the southern part of Cochise County, and another one what they call the Wilcox AMA. That would have been the Sulphur Springs Valley in the southern part of Graham County, I believe. It extends up towards Klondike in the Sulphur Springs Valley. And the one in Douglas passed. The one in the Wilcox did not. And I work with a lot of folks in the ag community down there in Cochise County. And I think a lot of that was a function of they really didn't understand what that AMA, it wasn't really really communicated to them very well as to what it would do, what it would provide for them. They recognize they have problems, they need to do something. The question is how and how much they do that. But it was a little concerning to me that I don't think they really understood what the facts were associated with that AMA, and they understood they were being communicated to a lot of misinformation as along the same line. But I still see here down there, there's still quite a bit of interest in this, but it needs to be clearly delineated for those folks as to what that would mean and how they would do that.
Let's talk some more about active management areas after we take the break, because what's been going on up in the suburbs of Phoenix, we need to really get into the situation that the state water director has said to Buckeye, Arizona, that you don't have, and said to developers, you do not have enough sustainable water supply to go ahead and build this one development. Then there's this issue outside of Scottsdale where the city of Scottsdale was trucking water to a development.
Right.
The city of Scottsdale says no more. We're not going to do it. So now those people are trying to figure out where we're going to get water. Let's try to pick up on that after we take the break.
Thank you.
It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the University of Arizona agronomist who is a regular contributor on agriculture to the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. They do a beautiful job over there in welcoming Southern Arizonans to their particular, well, it's a it's a peculiar, it's a beautiful area with its own kind of flavor, let's put it that way, that is so typical of the land of enchantment. You know, you cross the state line, and it is different. It's New Mexico, and it's a great getaway for Southern Arizonans. Silver City and Grant County, the first place to check, southwestnewmexico.org for places to stay. Only about a three-hour drive and things to do. I've been talking a lot lately because I think it's so incredible, their collection at Western New Mexico University on campus. They've redone the museum that has this fabulous Mimbrace pottery. It's the finest collection of the ancient people, the Mimbrace pottery in the United States. Let's welcome now to the Buckmaster Show for our second segment with Dr. Jeff Silvertooth. Jeff, you like Silver City. I know you like New Mexico a lot.
I do. I enjoy New Mexico, and Silver City is a very nice area.
Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster contributor in agriculture and a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. And we were talking before the break. I kind of tried to summarize what's been going on up in the Phoenix area. There's a couple of areas. Buckeye has kind of now under the microscope as far as development, housing development. And then this development east of Scottsdale had been relying on the city of Scottsdale to truck water to the development. But Scottsdale said, hey, we just can't do it anymore.
Right. Right. These are all symptoms or results of our drought.
I mean, this stuff is now coming to the fore. It's off the back burner. It's on the front burner.
As I believe it should be. You know, water's key to us. Water is our lifeblood of the desert, and water's life. So as desert dwellers, we better be alert to this. So it's good that we are. You know, and what you're pointing out, too, particularly to take the case over there around Buckeye, that's one of those situations that's developed as a result of the loopholes that exist in the 1980 Groundwater Management Act, which we were mentioning before the break. And that's some of these loopholes are some of the things that the developers can get around. Mm-hmm. And what they're supposed to be able to claim or to be able to substantiate is a 100-year water supply.
If they that's go what's out called the assured water supply.
Right.
And it's supposed to be 100 years.
Yes, sir, 100
But you're
years.
Saying there are some
there
loopholes.
There are some loopholes that they can get around that. And there's other problems we have with water management, water budgeting, and there's sometimes water is claimed twice by different entities, and that's a problem. But these are good examples of why people like Mr. Babbitt have come in to say that we should go back in and revisit the Groundwater Management Act, tighten up some of these loopholes, make it more clear, make it more definitive as to what we can do and what we should not be doing with regard to managing a sustainable water supply in this state. And both of those cases are good examples of that, by the way.
Our friend Richard, a listener, longtime listener, sends me an email during the break. Please ask Jeff, what about the mining industry?
Good point. Good point, Richard. Thank you for bringing that up. Mm-hmm. You know, that was in, you speak of the 1980 Groundwater Management Act. There were three major entities that were involved, and they were in conflict with one another. It was agriculture, mining, and the urban interests at the time. Now, the mines are still here. Mining is still a large industry in this state. They do utilize a lot of water. They are a part of that discussion that's going back into the reconsideration on the Groundwater Management Act again. But I really can't speak to any further detail on that. As I just don't know. But I do know that they are a major player in this state with respect to it as an industry. But it doesn't take away from the fact that agriculture utilizes 70% of the water in this state. So agriculture has the big target on its back. But mining is a major component. It's a good point, Richard. Thank you.
So when we talk about revising Arizona's Groundwater Management Act, is that a function of the Arizona legislature or is the federal government involved?
That's a state
so
legislation.
Would this be a legislative item?
Yes, sir.
They would have to revisit this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's who passed that. It was a major political feat to bring all those entities together in 1980. Bruce Babbitt was the governor. It's an interesting piece of our history in this state as well as water and natural resource history. But that is state legislation, and that's where that would be required to be hashed out again. So you have a Democratic governor now. You have a Republican-controlled legislature.
Yeah.
And you have some of the folks that are like Gail Griffin from Southeast Arizona. She's a chair of the Natural Resource Committee in the House. And basically that committee has a major portal through which this kind of legislation needs to move. So the politics and the negotiations are key to this right now.
And then they've got the ongoing talks with the federal government.
Then we have the Colorado River situation and ongoing talks with the federal government.
And when do you expect some kind of movement in that area?
Well, there's two parts to that question that I would answer. I would say, what do I want? I'd like to see it like right now, soon, ASAP, although I recognize it's extremely complex, as Commissioner Touton was recognizing here just a few weeks ago in her visit out here, which I'm glad she did again. But the other part of it is, too, that will take some time. I would hope that by the time we come around, the Bureau makes an announcement every year in August as to what their manager operational plan is going to be on the Colorado River, particularly from Lake Mead down the lower basin. And I had hoped by this next August, when they make that declaration, that they have worked some of this out to a much more complete detail. What they did last year is just move to tier 2A with the drought contingency plan. And it's a nice step, but it's not near enough.
Richard said to say thank you to Jeff. He just sent me an email. Jeff is one of my favorite interviews. And we always learn a lot. So
thank you, Richard. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Got a nice fan there, and he's right on. You are you always bring so much to the table.
Thank you.
Speaking of the table, the dinner table, a lot of people have been grumbling. We kind of touched on this in December. Lettuce prices have been way up. And then there's this whole issue with the eggs.
Right. Well, it's both good points.
Yeah.
Lettuce, we commented on that last month, and I was a little incomplete in my description, actually. I walked away from how you do sometimes in these interviews. And in retrospect, I realized we discussed the disease implications, which were there early in the season. But there was another major factor that fit in. We have had a cooler season. And the cooler season was slowing down the production of the crops. And
yeah,
we've
had a really cool and cold winter.
Yeah. And so that threw things, plants don't grow. We try to harvest them and plant them on these schedules.
Yeah.
But, Mother Nature really plays a tune and we dance. And that's a function of what we call heat units. So it's a thermal time that the plants recognize. And it just was cool. So those plants were progressing and growing more slowly than usual. So they were way behind in terms of their harvest. And that impacted then supply compounded by those disease problems that I mentioned earlier in the season. But that's what's happened with the lettuce. They're catching up with that. I was just down in Yuma the other day and they're harvesting full blast with nice full heads of lettuce, cauliflower, broccoli.
So there should be plenty of supply. Yeah, maybe the price point will come down a little bit.
Hopefully so. I mean, I know that they're pulling that out of the field on a more timely basis right now.
Now, what about eggs?
Eggs, there's a virus that got in with the poultry, the poultry industry. So the chickens suffered from that virus, quite a bit of mortality from that. That cuts down on egg supply. So that's a good example right there where there's a domino effect oftentimes of what happens in one place that can then impact us somewhere later, like perhaps in the grocery store with the egg supply. I paid like $5 a carton for a dozen eggs the other day. No, it's still, I can get eggs. A lot of us can, but it's higher than usual. We're looking at a situation too where speaking of the water, one of the common targets in agriculture is people complain about this alfalfa production, this water-sucking crops.
Yeah,
well,
alfalfa.
People forget that alfalfa is grown because it's a high-quality forage, high-protein, high-quality forage that feeds animals, particularly cattle. It has to feed both beef cattle and dairy cattle. Mm-hmm. So if we like our dairy products, milk and cheese and butter, yogurt, ice cream.
It's a big target right now, though.
It's
alfalfa.
A huge target. But right now, you look in the hay stocks in the United States, they're down almost 10%, 9%. And based on last year, 6% less than the drought in 2012, and the lowest ever since 1954 drought. Mm. And what that translates to with hay stocks being down, and hay stocks are down because of water cuts in central Arizona, water reductions, and other parts of the system. Mm-hmm. Well, that then translates to being able to feed cattle during a drought, which ranchers need to feed the cattle with less forage because of the droughty conditions. Mm. So cattle numbers are down, and we expect cattle prices to go up. So that's another domino effect that can
All right. Us. Had not heard about that side of the alfalfa story. That's why we like Jeff Silvertooth. He gives us both sides of the story. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you,
Hope you have a great rest of the day. We'll see you in February.
Thank you. You too.
That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Silvertooth and John engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying thank you so much for listening.